KFNX News Talk Radio 1100 presents The Charles Goyette Show. To speak with Charles, call 602-277-KFNX. That's 602-277-5369. And now, America's most independent talk show host, here's Charles Goyette.
Good morning. Welcome to our show, 7:07 in the morning. I am Charles Goyette. I don't know if you remember the era. If you don't remember, your parents will certainly remember the era, the late 1970s, the early 1980s, kind of the economic dislocations that were going on at the time. We had a period in which you could watch the U.S. dollar falling like a stone. It was literally in free fall. There was a period at which the secret banking operations that really settles accounts between nations in Switzerland, the Bank for International Settlements, said, you guys in the United States are going to have to do something serious about the dollar, and if you do not, then we're going to abandon the dollar as a unit of account for the settlement of international affairs as a reserve currency for the world. This was in the late 70s, early 1980s. I don't know if you remember, but you may, double-digit interest rates, the kind of inflation we had during that period. The recession of 1982 was, as I recall, probably the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. It was a real economic roller coaster. It was Mr. Toad's wild ride during that period. And a congressman from Texas by the name of Ron Paul was serving on the House Banking Committee and distinguished himself immediately and called himself to the attention of people that were really alert and paying attention to what was going on in the United States Congress and with the Federal Reserve and about the economic dislocations that the nation was facing. He distinguished himself by speaking about it in the most clear possible terms, talking about why we were where we were and where we were going and what the alternatives were and what they would mean, the different choices, the forks in the road. And since that time, I have carefully watched Congressman Ron Paul, and he has been a fount of wisdom, of restraint, a voice for limited government, for the Constitution. He has voted only in favor of measures that are consistent with the requirements of the Constitution and has voted against measures that are not constitutional in their effect. Congressman Ron Paul has offered himself up as a Republican candidate for president. He has formed an exploratory committee to that end. He is here in Arizona. We welcome him to our show. Congressman Paul, good of you to be here today.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
So how are you going to pull this off?
with your help, you're going to be my campaign manager.
Sure. I demand a recount, too.
There you go. Well, I personally by myself can't pull it off. I'm really trying to find out whether there's enough people in this country who really believe in freedom and the Constitution. And to my surprise, there are more out there than I thought. Mm-hmm. So there has been a change in the last 30 years since I've been involved in politics, and there are a lot more people who realize that the problems that we faced in the 1970s was an isolated event, but it was just a preliminary to some of the problems that we still face. Because if you look at our budget and the entitlement system and the foreign policy, our conditions are actually a lot worse than they were in 79 and 80 when that precipitated interest rates of 21% and the many problems that we had with high unemployment rates. So the big question is are there enough people out there that care? And can I rally them? And that's yet to be seen. And it's difficult to raise enough money to really compete. But on the internet, I think we're able to reach a lot of people. And talk shows like this have been very, very helpful. Major media outlets generally aren't going to be available to us. But we live in a different age right now. And the internet changes not only yearly, but almost weekly on the new programs and availability of finding out where our supporters are.
There really used to be two or three, four or five, there were a couple, two or three television pipelines, a couple of print journalism pipelines, and everything flowed through them. And if you didn't get heard or seen in those venues, then you weren't included. But now, it's wide open. I mean, everybody can go to Ron Paul on the internet and find out what's going on with your campaign, the kind of support. If the major news media isn't reporting the kind of greeting that you received, for example, at Sky Harbor Airport last night, just on one campaign stop, I mean, I guarantee you the other presidential candidates aren't getting that kind of greeting.
Yeah, and you know that, who knows, somebody might stick that on YouTube or something, and there will be, you know, tens of thousands, if not more, people will see this. And if you do that often enough, you know, the media generally is pretty lazy. So if there's something of significant that keeps popping up, you know, on the internet, you know, lo and behold, they may be influenced as well.
Well, you can see now, if you don't agree with Congressman Paul about anything else, you know, he's dead on about the media anyway. All right. This is your opportunity to talk with the man that that I will be supporting for president. Our telephone number is 602-277-KFNX. It is 602-277-5369. I want to take as many of your calls as possible, let you get a chance to talk to Congressman Paul, ask your specific questions. There was a time that it was maybe an occasional newsletter writer or a talk show here, host here or there, or yourself talking about the kind of the economic calamity that in my view, the Republicans and the Democrats have authored for this country. Now you've got, for example, the controller of the currency running around in a virtual state of alarm, trying to awaken the American people. What's coming our way?
Well, as I said before, I think it's a lot worse. Although right now things look not all that bad. And a lot of people say, well, you've made predictions before and they haven't come true. I just wished fewer of my predictions would come true. I'd feel better about it. But I think the conditions are much worse. And as you mentioned, the comptroller, David Walker, has pointed out the dire things that are going to happen with our commitment on entitlements. Nobody can actually even measure it, but our entitlement system has probably committed future generations to like $60 trillion. And the national debt is a big problem, but that's minor compared to this entitlement problem, because we have to keep producing to make these commitments. Now, so far, we're able to limp along because we do still have the status of being able to issue the reserve currency of the world. Although it's not backed by gold, and although it is pure paper money, there's still a basic agreement around the world that we will take your dollars, we will produce for you, and then we'll loan you all this money back again, which is actually a real good deal for us. And a lot of Americans complain about why we buy so much stuff from overseas, but it's actually a gift. But that gift is coming to an end, and the people are getting nervous about it because they say, well, the jobs are all overseas. Well, why have jobs here if people will work for us and we print up the money and give it to them? But they're starting to realize that the good, productive jobs and manufacturing has left the country. So there's much more disequilibrium in the system than there was in the 70s and even in the 80s. So what will happen eventually, will the foreigners will quit taking our dollars, and there will be another dollar crisis. So we will have to face up to this. We've lived beyond our means. I'm convinced we as a nation will have to live beneath our means, and it will not be painless. It's going to affect everybody.
Now, you heard on your way over here to the studio, I know my conversation with Tom. One of the great ironies, by the way, is that when you left the House in 1984 originally, the guy that took your place was, oh my God, was Tom DeLay.
That's right.
I said to somebody on the air the other day, he had some big shoes to fill and he didn't fill them when he took your old seat. But we had him on the show and I asked him about the war in Iraq. And I said, why didn't you get a congressional declaration of war? You know, you swore to uphold the Constitution. It says, you know, Congress has to declare war. Will you walk us back through that period in 2002?
Right. Matter of fact, my intense interest in that subject began in 1998, where even under the Clinton administration, there was a resolution passed on the House floor. It was called the Iraq Liberation Act, which established our policy as that of regime change. So it started early on. The plans had been laid for a long, long time. So I was never surprised that, you know, the first cabinet meeting under Bush, they bring up the subject of when we're going to attack Iraq. The very first subject after 9/11, even though Iraq had nothing to do with it. Well, when are we going to hit Iraq? There was a plan. They wanted to get rid of it. They wanted to control the oil and various other reasons why they wanted to be in there. So I'm on international relations, and the resolution came through that committee, which would have been right before the election of 2002, because it was a political stunt, you know, try to embarrass people to show that they're weak on national defense and they're not willing to go after these vicious dictators. So when that resolution came up, I offered a substitute. I said, look, I don't want to go to war. It doesn't make any sense to me. But if you're going to war, you ought to do it properly. And then people should get behind it. I said, so I'm substituting the resolution with a declaration of war. And of course, they mocked it. They made fun of it. You know, the chairman said, you know, that part of the Constitution is anachronistic.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
That part of the Constitution is anachronistic.
Yeah, that part on the Declaration of War, we don't use it anymore. It's anachronistic. And then Lantos out of California, who was ranking at the time, he says, why do you bring up these frivolous things? So it was voted on, and then they were furious because I made them record their vote, and it was nobody voted for it, of course. But that is basically, I think, our problem. Since World War II, we've never declared war. We've never won a war. We've become the policemen of the world. We're going broke, and it doesn't seem to bother too many people. And yet, there's a lot of people who lose a lot of lives are being lost. A lot of people are coming back crippled and without arms and legs. It's really a tragedy. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to come to any common sense in Washington until we do that which so many other empires have done. We just run out of steam, we run out of money, and the empire collapses because we can't afford it any longer. We don't seem to wise up.
Well, that won't be an enjoyable period.
No, it's gonna be terrible, but it'll be a mixed blessing because our troops will come home, and maybe we will be living in more peace. We might be working a lot harder,
right.
But if we restore our freedoms, we do not have to worry about our prosperity. I do not worry about that, but the key to it is preserving our freedoms, and we will always remain prosperous.
Well, along that line, you're familiar with the phrase that war is the health of the state. I mean, but for the existence of this war, Congress and the administration wouldn't have been able to get away with what they have done in terms of our civil liberties in this country.
Right, and everything has to become a war, whether it's a war on drugs or a war on poverty or a war on terrorism. And now the war on terrorism is official, and it's pervasive. It's everywhere, and it's anybody. And it's going to be with us for a long time, they tell us. And yet terrorism, it's just a tactic. It's like declaring war against criminality. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. But it does stir up fear. And people do succumb. And unfortunately, the majority of American people say, well, giving up a little freedom doesn't seem to be a big deal. What I want to be is safe. Of course, what I'd like to do is rally those who disagree with that issue, realizing that being fearful and intimidated, that maybe what our government's doing to ourselves is more dangerous than the potential of a Saddam Hussein ever coming over here. I mean, there was absolutely no danger of Saddam Hussein ever attacking
us. Wait a minute. You must not have seen those wind-up rubber band balsa wood drones that he was going to fly over the Atlantic.
With a nuclear weapon on it.
Jeez. All right. Congressman Ron Paul, we'll go to the phones after this short break, the Charles Goyette Show. Our telephone number is 602-277-KFNX, 602-277-5369. All right, 7:23 in the morning from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. This is the Charles Goyette Show. Time to go to the phone, 602-277-KFNX. It's a delightful array of calls, topics, and issues that we have on the board this morning for Congressman Ron Paul. I mean, it ranges all the way from Iran to national sovereignty to the national sovereignty issues, petrodollars, and more. Let's get started. Nancy in Phoenix is first. Nancy, good morning.
Hi, Charles. Good morning, Congressman Paul, and thank you for your independent spirit.
Thank
it's
you.
It's rather refreshing. What I wanted to know specifically is, has any legislation been proposed regarding making this president come to Congress prior to taking military action against Iran? I understand there was legislation with 102 signatories. It was yanked out of the Iraq bill at the last minute by Nancy Pelosi. I know Bernie Sanders has proposed legislation in the Senate regarding that, and I think it's imminent. And we're right on the edge, and I'm hoping that you have proposed legislation, or you know someone who has, or you're a supporter of such legislation.
Yes, and I think you've summarized it pretty well. There was a piece of legislation where we designated that the president must come to us for authority to go in and bomb Iran. And I was an original co-sponsor of that bill, and yet when I co-sponsored that, I said it's rather sad that we have to, because if we had a president that followed the Constitution, he would just assume that he has to come to the Congress. But anyway, I was quite willing to restate the position of the Constitution. And you're right, it was in the supplemental bill, and it was deliberately removed. And that was disheartening because indirectly that almost is saying to the public and to the president, well, we don't want to prohibit you from it. So it's almost de facto, we'll go ahead and do it without permission. So that piece of legislation, which became part of the supplemental, still is around, but it's not likely to go anywhere. But I do think it makes the point that the Democrats would like to have it both ways. They won the election. They won it on the war issue. They have to appear to be against the war. And yet when the president asked for 90-some billion dollars to fight the war, the Democrats actually gave him more money to fight the war and remove the prohibition against going into Iran, and then had that token effort to dictate to the president exactly how he should move the troops here and there, which I didn't think had much merit. Besides, the president will ignore it if he so chooses. My position is that if we should come home, which I believe we should just defund it. We have the authority and responsibility, and I also would I also support legislation that would remove that authority given to the president in 2002.
Is that going to be reintroduced?
That for
specifically Iran.
Well, it is. It's still sitting there. It doesn't have to be reintroduced. It's there. It's just not going to be brought up. If it would have been brought up, it would have been brought up with this supplemental, because that would have been the best way to do it. But so the odds are that it's very, very unlikely.
Oh.
And I think when Pelosi did this, I saw a statement in the paper with that, which was rather blunt, and they said that they did not want to offend Israel.
Well, yes, she was booed when she spoke in front of AIPAC. She was roundly booed, and it was soon after that that she yanked that.
So she had to make up.
Oh, well, I'm sad to hear that, because I see that as our one chance to get ahead of the curve, to restore the balance of power, and it seems that that's not going to happen. I'm so sorry.
Well, we have to keep fighting.
Thank you, Nancy. Let's talk with George. He's from Chandler this morning. George, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Charles Goyer. I have been listening to you, and of course, you know, the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul. What a great man, you know. He's the man that America needs more than ever. Dr. Ron Paul, you had a bill, a House bill, that you have introduced in Texas, I do believe, and that called for a National Sovereignty Restoration Act. Whatever happened to that bill? Why don't we reintroduce that bill again? Because if this nation has ever needed, there's an urgency to reintroduce that bill, sir. For the enemies have not only outside of the gates of America, they have already marched all the way to Washington, D.C., and they have hijacked our government and our nation. They are about to turn this great nation into a federation of Soviet style.
Well, let's find out. Let's find out about the National Sovereignty Act.
The bill has been reintroduced. I introduce it in every session. We never get a tremendous number of co-sponsors, maybe a dozen or so. And that means that we would get out of the United Nations and that we would not kowtow to the international organizations and governments that we have been kowtowing to, which means that we believe in national sovereignty. Matter of fact, I would like to see less sovereignty in Washington, D.C., a lot more local and a lot more left with the individual. So, but you're right. It's a very important issue, and yet the momentum is so strongly against us because it's like you're unpatriotic if you're against the United Nations. Matter of fact, that one, the resolution which transferred this power to the president to go to war on his own gave two reasons. One was Saddam Hussein was a threat to us, and the other was we had to enforce UN resolution. We did not want the United Nations undermined. So that is a major subject. We have a lot of work to do on it.
Well, it's a shame to think the United States could be some sort of a mercenary army enforcing UN resolutions around the world. There was a time that members of the conservative movement and the Republican Party especially would have resented that sort of an idea. Congressman Ron Paul, our in-studio guest, the Charles Goyette Show. Back to the phones after the news break, 602-277-KFNX. 7:35 in the morning, the Charles Goyette Show from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And, of course, thank you for joining us, and our thanks to Congressman Ron Paul for stopping by our studio during his campaign swing through Arizona. Congressman Ron Paul has formed an exploratory committee to consider seeking the presidency, the nomination of the Republican Party. That requires obviously a lot of money. You will not have the support, I presume, of the Republican Party establishment. So that's a foregone conclusion,
right?
So you're going to have to raise a lot of money through the internet and from people that are just constituents. Huh?
Right. That's it. You have to go one-on-one, and there'll be small donations, but enough of them will add up.
Well, I actually think this could be a prairie fire year in America, and I'm not given to be a Don Quixote tilting at windmills, but some of the reasons are that people have got to be enormously dissatisfied with the R's and the D's and what they have done for us, the conventional Republicans, the conventional Democrats, in my view, the poisoning of partisanship. I mean, Congressman, is there any doubt that if this war, with the outcome that we have encountered, had been a Bill Clinton initiative, that the Republicans would be up in arms about it?
Absolutely. They are very narrow partisans, and if Bill Clinton had been doing this, the Republicans would have opposed to it. Just think, it's not too many years ago that our current president won an election by being strongly critical of an interventionist foreign policy. He criticized Clinton for being in Somalia and Kosovo and did not want to be the world policeman and did not want to interfere in these internal affairs. And yet, at the same time, he's doing exactly the same thing. Remember, he talked about a humble foreign policy, kind of things that I was very sympathetic for, and I was hoping that we would have a change in foreign policy. But their answer now is, well, 9/11 changed everything. Unfortunately, that is true. Psychologically, it did change, but it shouldn't have. There's no reason you have to sacrifice liberties and start wars that are unnecessary just because we were attacked on 9/11. We should go after the enemy, not just to go after the entire world.
Yeah. Well, in describing your campaign and the prospects for your campaign and what could be a prairie fire year, I've said to my audience that what I believe makes you unique is if you took any of the Arizona congressional delegation, they're little known in their district. They may be known across the state a little bit, but they're not known specifically outside of the state of Arizona. Whereas you have a constituency. And it's hard for people who don't know you to grasp that you, as a Republican congressman from Texas, have a constituency in every congressional district in the land.
Yes, and that's helpful. And I don't think it's so much a reflection of myself as much as a reflection of the views that I hold. Because, you know, we talked a little bit earlier on about the monetary issue. That's been an issue that I've dealt with for 30 years. And just the size of government is a big issue in individual liberty. Now, since I have opposed and fought against an interventionist foreign policy for so many years, and we're seeing the dire consequences of a failed policy, all of a sudden I think these views are becoming much more popular and people are becoming more interested. And it brings a coalition of people together. It's just not conservative Republicans that are interested in these viewpoints. Because if you're concerned about civil liberties, you know, you might pick up some moderates and some liberals on this issue. Matter of fact, there are some liberals that would agree with me on the non-interventionist foreign policy, even though that had traditionally been a Republican position. So on the economic issues, that tends to be more of a conservative issue. So I think it's a great position to hold, a great philosophy. And, you know, the other thing that is so attractive to it is we can fulfill this policy by just merely following our oath of office. You know, and if you happen to believe that maybe the rule of law is worth something, you know, maybe we should pay attention to it. And if you want to change something in the Constitution, do it in a deliberate manner, but not to do it by just totally ignoring the Constitution. And that's that has appeal across the board as well.
Let's go to the phones for Congressman Ron Paul. Here is Mark in Phoenix. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Charles. Good morning, Congressman Paul.
Good morning.
It's a pleasure to speak with you both. I have two quick statements before I get to my question. First, Congressman, I think I saw that you were going to be on Bill Maher tonight. I look forward to seeing you on television this evening. Second, I think every American should ingrain this in their brain. Those that would trade liberty for security will not receive, nor should they deserve, either. And that gets to my question. I know what my answer is, but I'd like to hear what you both think. What do you think is the greatest threat to the United States today?
To me, the greatest threat is the size and scope of our federal government and the intrusion of our personal liberties, whether it's our
I was going to say the same thing. I think the greatest threat to our country is ourselves. It's not Iran. It's not Iraq. It's ordinary individuals being so dissatisfied with their government and with the size of their government and the freedoms that their government is taking away from them.
You know, this to me is so true, because if you look at all the countries of the world that we're invading and threatening and intimidating, they are totally incapable of threatening us. I mean, here we have created a preemptive war against Iraq. They had no army, navy, air force, missiles, nothing. And yet they were painted like it was Hitler who was going to take over the world the next day. Same thing with the Iranians. The Iranians have no interest in provoking us into attacking them. They would do what they could to prevent this. So this assumption that they're about to attack us here at home, but on a daily basis, the U.S. Congress and our courts and our executive branch are attacking our personal liberties continuously, passing laws that give away our sovereignty and take away our privacy, and removing rights like habeas corpus. Constantly, we are being undermined here at home. And the question is, are there more people like you as an individual who believe that our own government is a threat, or do people believe that we have to give up some of our freedoms in order to be safe and secure? Economically, the large majority of Americans believe that the federal government is the safety net, that you can only be taken care of by the government, and therefore you have to endorse the entitlement welfare state. But that's doomed to bankruptcy. And besides, it's based on a fraudulent notion of theft, that you have to steal from one group to give to another. And it doesn't work. So one day we're going to have to challenge this. And I'm afraid the real challenge isn't going to come until we face our bankruptcy.
Darren in Phoenix, Congressman Ron Paul on the Charles Goyette Show. Hey, Darren.
How are you doing, Charles? And
good.
Congressman Paul.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I earnestly hope that your campaign gains legs, as I see no other candidate who can bring our nation back from the brink. Dr. Paul, you touched on the dollar a few minutes ago, so I'd like to ask you to provide your insight regarding the impact of Iraq moving from the dollar to the euro for oil transactions back in 2001, and how much that played into our invasion of Iraq. And do you think this might be the same reason or a part of the reason that we appear to about to replay that scenario with Iran? I'm at work right now, so I'll listen off the air.
No, I think it's significant. I don't think that's the only issue, but it is true. Since Bretton Woods was established right after World War II, it was agreed that the Arab, the nations would, in particular Saudi Arabia, would always use the dollar to buy oil. And Saddam Hussein moved away from the dollar right before he was invaded. And this probably was part of the reason, although there were other factors as well. And the same thing, the Iranians have threatened to do the same thing. So I think this plays a major role. I don't think it's the only role. But if they do move away from the dollar significantly, this will bring us to our knees, because the dollars will flow back home. Interest rates are going to go up very high. We're going to have domestic inflation, and our economy will remain weak. So it's high stakes to keep the dollar in this position. Matter of fact, even those who are taking our dollars have so many of them, they're working with us to try to keep the collapse from the dollar from coming. But I do believe that the dollar is interrelated with our foreign policy as well.
Yeah, thank you very much for your call. By the way, I wanted to loop back around. I understood, too, that you're going to be on Bill Maher's show tonight. Did you tape an interview with him fairly recently?
No, I believe I'm going to a studio, and I'll be on for a short period of time, but it will be this evening.
All right, Bill Maher on HBO tonight, Congressman Ron Paul, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. In addition to that, Congressman Paul was greeted by quite a welcoming committee last night at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport when his plane got in. Even though it got in an hour late, the welcoming committee was still there, signs and cheers, and they were so happy. If you would like to see the photos from the welcoming committee, they're on the internet at freedomsphoenix.com. freedomsphoenix.com for the welcoming committee and the good and true people that turned out last night to welcome Congressman Ron Paul. Back to the phones. John in Scottsdale is next. John, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Good morning,
morning,
Congressman. Appreciate it. I hate to rain on your parade here, but I'm going to have to do that. You made a statement about choice and robbery, and I think it went to the effect, why should Arizonans be robbed because people chose, we were talking here about Katrina, to live on the coast. Do you recall making a statement like that?
I do recall
okay,
that.
Okay, well,
right.
let me explain to you why. And I think this is a simple example, but it goes to the core of the problem with your way of thinking. If you look at the United States, you'll find that at least 12 congressmen of our states are coastal. And just rough math here, that's very rough math taken from a computer here, taken from the data, there are 120 million Americans living in coastal area states. Now, that means if you take a percentage of that, you've got maybe 14, 15 million people living near or on a coast. And when an event like Katrina occurs, congressmen, it's potentially affecting not just New Orleans. It affects potentially all of us. And the reason we have, see, the taxes don't come from you, congressman. It comes from us. I'm the taxpayer, and that is my money that you're talking about.
Well, you're free to send your money to New Orleans.
Well, that's true.
But
the government who builds dikes and who builds impediments to the sea must take some responsibility. I know that I'm free to, and I did, by the way, Charles, I did send
money to New
Orleans.
Well, you're to be commended for it. I think
the point remains, Charles, that there are millions of people living on the coast, and one individual.
Well, look,
Charles,
John, I had dinner last night with people that had just flown in from.
Well, why don't you let the congressman
answer,
Charles?
Well, wait, I will, but it's my show, too. It's my name on the door, you know.
Well, you don't have to jump to his defense.
No, I'm not jumping to his defense. I'm interested in the conversation.
He made the comment.
Yeah, I'll let him answer.
Okay, go ahead.
I had dinner last night with people that just flew into town from Tornado Alley.
Yeah.
They chose to live in Tornado Alley. If they want to live in a mobile home park in Tornado Alley, should I assume the risk for them? Look, when it gets to be 122 degrees in Phoenix, I don't ask them to pay my air conditioning bill.
You're missing the point, Charles.
No, you're missing the point.
The choice is not where you live. The question is a tornado. That's a natural accident.
122 degrees is a natural accident.
By a tornado, Charles, but let the congressman get in on this because it does go to the basic flaw in his argument.
Congressman Paul, what about the basic flaw in your argument?
I think everybody has the same concerns about helping people when they're having trouble. The question is whether it should be done through coercion or a voluntary means or local government. And I opt out from the federal government doing it because that involves central economic planning. So even if we accepted the gentleman's premise on a moral premise, in a practical way, it's a total failure. I mean, we'd have been better off taking the amount of money and giving every single family $20,000, and they'd have all been better off than if the way we did it. We bought all these trailer homes and they sat out in the open. So the whole thing is insane. It's a total waste. And besides, the reason I don't like these federal government programs, it encourages people like me to build on the beach. I have a house on the beach at the Gulf of Mexico. But why don't I assume my own responsibility? Why doesn't the market tell me what the insurance rate should be? Because it would be very, very high. But because we want it subsidized, we ask the people of Arizona to subsidize my insurance so I can take greater danger. My house gets blown down, and then the people in Arizona rebuild it? In my statement back on during the time of Katrina, which was a rather risky political statement, that was that why do the people of Arizona have to pay for me to take my risk on those beaches? But all you have to do is study history to find out that less federal government intervention actually works. The worst hurricane this country ever had was in 1900 in Galveston. The city of Galveston was wiped off the map, essentially, and it was rebuilt with a seawall that still exists today, and you never had a nickel from the federal government. It was all done with local. The city and local people did this. So it isn't like that we don't care, that we don't think problems won't be taken care of. We think they'll be taken care of better, and we think less people will be exposed to danger if you don't subsidize risky behavior.
Well, that was a component of the tragedy in New Orleans is the local people who should have been responsible for the levees and the dikes, they had a pretty good idea the kind of shape they were in, but they thought they were going to let George do it. They thought that the dikes were going to be maintained by somebody in Washington, but really, Dianne Feinstein really didn't know the condition of the dikes the way that people that live next door to them knew, and the dangers that they faced if the levees gave way in New Orleans. The congressmen in Washington didn't have any idea the risks that they faced the way the people that lived in that basin knew.
So in many ways, you could make the case that say that it was the original government intervention that set the stage for the disaster of New Orleans. I mean, not only did they build a city below sea level, it was the federal government that was supposed to do the upkeep, and they didn't do it. So I think it's a very serious mistake to think that central economic planning and forcibly transferring wealth from people who don't take risks to people who take risks is a proper way to go. Not in a free society. In a socialist society, I guess that's the way it works. But it's very inefficient, it's very, very costly, and it will contribute to our bankruptcy.
7:51 in the morning, Congressman Ron Paul on the Charles Goyette Show. 7:54 in the morning. The Charles Goyette Show is on the air this morning, every morning from 6 until 9 o'clock. But it's not every morning that we get the guy in studio that I'm supporting for the presidency. It's clearly going to take a lot of work on the part of a lot of people. I'm willing to do my part. The only politician I've sent any money to over the last, I think, at least 15 years. I don't think I've sent a dime to anybody else over that period of time, except for Congressman Ron Paul. And so I'd like to roll up my sleeves and be helpful to him as well. Congressman Paul, one thing that we haven't talked about, we've covered a lot of stuff. We haven't talked about the border issue and immigration. Have at it.
Well, that's just a minor issue these days.
It's not big around here at all.
Well, obviously it is a major issue. It's probably one of the top issues that people bring up no matter what state I'm in. You know, it isn't just the border states that have a concern. So you can go into New England and they're bringing this subject up as well. My position is that you get too much of something when there's an incentive. So I think there's too much of an incentive for illegals to come to this country, and it involves the welfare state and automatic citizenship. So I've taken a very strong position that just being born in this country should not qualify you for automatic citizenship, and I'm opposed to all amnesty programs. What I would like to see is to de-emphasize the benefits. I do not think there should be any mandates, whether at the federal level, at the state level, they shouldn't do it either, that illegal immigrants should not be able to come here and get free education and free health care, because that's an incentive to bring the family. So if there's amnesty out there in the future, and in the meantime you get free health care and medical care and education, why not bring the families and just wait it out? And I think you have to get rid of those incentives. As important as protecting the borders are, that is not the solution as long as those incentives are so strong. Today, all you have to do is work here about 18 months and you can qualify for Social Security benefits after going back to Mexico. And they want to move us toward this North American Union, and that's why I think a lot of people aren't too interested in protecting these borders. My problem with the borders and for our foreign policy is that we concentrate so much on putting our resources around the world, worrying about a border, say, between Syria and Iraq, and claiming, you know, those Syrians aren't doing their job in protecting their borders. At the same time, what do we do over here to protect our borders? So we just totally ignore it. So it is a major problem, but the welfare state is such a huge contributing factor. The truth is there are a lot of jobs going wanting around here because there's a lot of people who don't work that should work. And if they didn't have access to welfare, they might work for minimum wage or do other things that might be more of an incentive to work rather than going on the dole. So the welfare state works to bring people in as well as it works to distort our labor markets here at home. So there's no easy answer without addressing the subject of the welfare state. But in the meantime, what we should be doing is saving a lot of money from all the tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars we spend overseas and use those resources to have better border protection here.
All right. Hey, Chet, can you move things around to give me – thank you so much, man. It throws his world into topsy-turvy, but I need another minute that we don't really have so that I can find out from you. How can we help? I mean, what does it take? How can people contribute to your effort?
Well, the most important thing is that we have more numbers who endorse the views of limited government and the Constitution. The numbers go a long way. The second is to tie up with our organization, which means they would have to dial into Ron Paul 2000, you know, on the internet and sign up to help. And then if they're capable or anxious to, the funding is very necessary, because it is costly trying to compete with those who have hundreds of millions of dollars. But I think that shoestring type of operation can work today because of the internet. So it's the use of the internet and spreading a message, if they agree with it, to the largest number of people and trying to tie them into our organization.
All right. It's Ron Paul 2000 on the internet. RonPaul2000.com.
2008.com.
Oh, yeah, yeah. RonPaul 2008. What am I thinking? We muffed our chance in 2000. We got another chance in 2000.
That's right.
Thank you very much for your time this morning. Good luck to you. We're rooting you on here from this corner, and there are people all over the country. We're pinning a lot of hopes on you, frankly, because there's nowhere else to turn. And so don't give up, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right. Congressman Ron Paul. Now, if you're on the line, you want to continue to talk about presidential politics in the country, we'll do it right after the news on The Charles Goyette Show.